Listening Library presents Tropical Secrets, Holocaust Refugees in Cuba by Margarita Engel. Read for you by Matt Green, Vane Millon, Ozzy Rodriguez, and Roberto Santana, with historical notes read by the author. June 1939.
Daniel. Last year in Berlin, on the night of Crystal, my grandfather was killed while I held his hand. The shattered glass of 1,000 windows turned into the salty liquid of tears. How can hatred have such a beautiful name? Crystal should be clear, but on that dark night, the glass of broken windows did not glitter. Nothing could be seen through the haze of pain. Daniel. My parents are musicians, poor people, not rich. They had only enough money for one ticket to flee Germany, where Jewish families like ours are disappearing during nights of crushed glass. My parents chose to save me instead of saving themselves. So now, here I am, alone, on a German ship stranded in Havana Harbor, halfway around the huge world. Thousands of other Jewish refugees stand all around me, on the deck of the ship, waiting for refuge. Daniel. First the ship sailed to New York, and then Canada, but we were turned away at every harbor. If Cuba does not allow us to land, will we be sent back to Germany's shattered nights? With blurry eyes and an aching head, I force myself to believe that Cuba will help us, and that someday I will find my parents and we will be a family once again.
Paloma. One more ship waits in the harbor. One ship among so many, all filled with sad strangers, waiting for permission to land here in Cuba. Our island must seem like such a peaceful resting place on the way to safety. I stand in a crowd on the docks, wondering why all these ships have been turned away from the United States and Canada.
Daniel. One of the German sailors sees me gazing over the ship's railing at the sunny island with its crowded docks where strangers stand gazing back at us. The sailor calls me an evil name, then he spits in my face. But I am too frightened to wipe away the thick, liquid hatred. So I cling to the railing in silence, with spit on my forehead. I am 13, a young man, but today I feel like a baby seagull with a broken beak. Daniel. This tropical heat is a weight in the sky, crushing my breath. But I will not remove my winter coat, or my fur hat, or the itchy wool scarf my mother knitted, or the gloves my father gave me to keep my hands warm so that we could all play music together someday in the golden land called New York. If I remove my warm clothes, someone might steal them, along with my fading, stubborn dream of somehow reaching the city where my parents promised to find me. Beside a glowing door at the base of a statue called Liberty, in a city with seasons of snow, just like home.
Paloma. My father's secrets torment me. Almost every evening I hear him whispering plans as he dines and drinks with other officials, the ones who decide what will happen to all the sad people on their patient boats. Last night, I heard my father say that all these refugees from faraway places are making him rich. I heard him bickering with his friends about the price they will charge for permission to come ashore and find refuge in Cuba.
Daniel, the only riches I have ever known are the sounds of pianos, flutes, and violins. So when the German sailors on this ship keep telling me that I am rich and that I should pay them to stop spitting in my face, I feel like laughing and crying at the same time. I have only a few coins sewn into a secret place inside my heavy, itchy coat. But my parents warn me that I will need that little bit of money no matter where I end up. So I must let the sailors spit. I keep telling myself that if I ever reach New York or any other safe place, I will look back on this day of heat and humiliation, and none of it will matter, as long as I'm free to play music and to believe that I still have a family somewhere.
Paloma. When I overhear my father's secrets, I understand. Any ship turned away from Cuba will have no place to go, no safe place on earth. Those ships will return to Germany, where all the refugees will suddenly be homeless and helpless in their own homeland. My father thinks it is funny, a clever trick, the way he sells visas to enter our small island nation, and then decides whether the people who buy the visas will actually be allowed to land.
Daniel. Land, solid ground, the firmness of earth beneath my shoes, even if it is just a filthy street crowded with beggars wearing strange costumes. And people of all different colors mixed up together, as if God had poured out a bunch of leftover paints after making brown rocks in beige sand.
Paloma. Drumming. Someone is drumming on our front door. It's the sound of a vendor knocking at the door and singing in Spanish with his raspy Russian accent. Singing about cold, sweet ice cream. Vanilla in a chocolate shell, like some sort of odd sea creature from the far north. Papa would be furious if he knew that I am a friend of the old man who sells ice cream door to door. Papa would be angry not only because David is poor and foreign, but also because he is Jewish, a refugee who came to Cuba from the Ukraine long ago. I open the door and greet David. I buy the cold treat quietly. Whispering is a skill I have learned by watching my father make his secret deals. Paloma. The next singing vendor who comes along is a Chinese man selling herbs and red ribbons to ward off the evil eye. I buy one strand of protection for each of my long black braids, and a third for the dovecote. My castle-like tower in our huge, forested garden. The tower where I feed my winged friends, wild doves who come and go as they please, gentle friends, not captives in cages. Even bright ribbons and cold ice cream are not enough to make me feel like an ordinary 12-year-old girl. I feel like a fairy tale princess, cursed with deadly secrets that must be kept silent.
Daniel. Hundreds of refugees crowd into the central courtyard, an open patio at the heart of an oddly shaped Cuban house. I am not accustomed to buildings with trees and flowers at the center and a view of open sky right in the middle of the house, where one would expect to find a stone fireplace and sturdy brick walls. Brown-skinned Cubans and a red-haired American Quaker woman take turns trying to give me new clothes made of cotton, but I refuse to take off my thick winter coat. I find it almost impossible to believe that I will ever see my parents again, but at the same time, I secretly remember their dream of being reunited in a cold, glowing city. I don't see how I can survive without that tiny sliver of hope, my imaginary snow. Daniel. A friendly old man gives me one ice cream bar after another. He says he had to flee Russia long ago, just as I have fled Germany. He tells me he understands how I feel. I am certain that no one could ever understand, but he speaks Yiddish, so I shower him with questions. He tells me his name is David, and that over the years he has grown used to hearing his name pronounced the Spanish way, David, with an accent on the second syllable, like the sound of a musical burst at the end. I promise myself that I will never let anyone change the rhythm of my name. Daniel. 2 days later, I am still wearing my heavy coat. The old ice cream man tells me that I will have to stay here in hot, sweaty Hotel Cuba, so I might as well remove my uncomfortable clothing. It takes me a while to figure out that David is joking. I am not really in a hotel, but in some sort of strange makeshift shelter for refugees. The ice cream is charity, my melting breakfast and messy dinner. Daniel. A girl with olive skin and green eyes helps David pass out festive plates of saffron yellow rice and soupy black beans. The girl has wavy red ribbons woven into her thick black braids. She glances at me, and I glare back, trying to tell her to leave me alone. The meal is strange, but after 2 days of ice cream, hot food tastes good, even in this sweltering tropical weather. My coat is folded up beside me. I am finally wearing cotton clothing, cool and comfortable, a shirt and pants donated by strangers. What choice do I have? I still cling to my dream of a family reunion in snowy New York. But in the meantime, here I am, in the sweaty tropics, struggling to breathe humid air that feels as thick as the steam from a pot of my mother's fragrant tea. Daniel. The girl asks me questions in Spanish, while the ice cream man translates into Yiddish. Back and forth we go, passing words from one language to another. And none of them are my own native tongue, Berlin's familiar German. Still, I am grateful that Jews in Europe all share Yiddish, the language of people who have had to flee from one land to another more than once.
David, I am glad that I have plenty of ice cream and advice to give away. Because what else can I offer to all these frightened people who are just beginning to understand what it means to be a refugee without a home?
Daniel. David says that removing my coat was the first step and accepting strange food was the second. Now, he wants me to plunge into the ocean. Others are doing it. All around me, refugees wade into the island's warm, turquoise sea. David insists that I must learn how to swim if I want to cool off on hot days. He speaks to me with his hands dancing and his voice musical, just like the islanders who sound like chattering wild birds. I find the old man's company comforting in some ways and troubling in others. He is still Russian, still Jewish, but he talks like a completely new sort of person, one without memories to treasure. Daniel. The city of Havana is never quiet. Sleep is impossible. There are always the drums of passing footsteps and the horns of traffic and choirs of dogs barking. An orchestra of vendors singing and neighbors laughing and children fighting. Today, when I ventured out by myself, one beggar sang to me and another handed me a poem in a language I cannot read. and there was an old woman who cursed me because I could not give her a coin. Some words can be understood without knowing the language. I lie awake, hour after hour, remembering the old woman's anger along with my own. Daniel. Perhaps it is true, as my father used to say, that languages do not matter as much to musicians as to other people. My grandfather was always able to communicate with violinists from other countries by playing the violin, and when a French pianist visited our house, my parents spoke to him with sonatas. And when an Italian cellist asked me a question, I answered him with my flute. Daniel. All I want to do is lose myself in dreams of home, but the Cuban girl who brings food keeps asking me questions in Spanish. I try to silence her by drumming my hands against the trunks of trees and vines in the courtyard of this crazy, noisy shelter. My impatient rhythm is answered by cicadas and crickets. If I could speak Spanish, I would remind the girl that I am not here in Cuba by choice. I have nothing to say to any stranger who treats me like a normal person with a family and a home. Daniel. Weeks at sea introduced me to a new kind of music. Endless and constant, sung by a voice of air and water, a voice of nature so enormous that it can be ridden by humans in tiny vessels. Our huge ships as small as toys from the point of view of an ocean wave. There was also the music of moaning masses, babies shrieking, mothers weeping, and sailors howling, wolf-like, as they sang their hideous Nazi songs. Daniel. The girl gives me an orange. I cannot bring myself to eat it, because at home, oranges are precious. One orange was a treasure in Germany in winter. My mother would place the golden fruit at the center of our dining table, and we would gather around to gaze and marvel, inhaling the fragrance of warm climates like that of the Holy Land. Daniel. The orange in my hand looks like a sun and smells like heaven. I cannot believe my ears when David tells me to peel the radiant fruit and eat all the juicy sections by myself. He says there are so many oranges in Cuba that I can eat my fill every day for the rest of my life. I glare at David, hoping he will see that I am different. I am not like him. I have no intention of giving up hope. I will not spend my life here in Cuba with strangers. I close my fist around the orange, refusing to swallow anything so sacred.
Paloma. Germans were in my house last night. Not refugees, but the other Germans. The ones who cause all the trouble that forces refugees to flee. Papa made me stay in my room. He sent all the servants home early. He did not whisper, but spoke in his loud, laughing voice, the one he uses when he knows that he is getting rich. I sneaked onto the stairway and heard a few fragments of the German visitor's plan. Something about showing the world that even a small tropical island like Cuba wants nothing to do with helping Jews.
El Gordo. Business is business. Why should I care about Nazis or Jews? I find money for my fat wallet any way I can. Business is busyness. A busy life wards off the evil eye of sadness. My daughter knows nothing about business or evil eyes. She's just a child who hides in a tower with wild doves.
David, the radio and magazines are filled with hateful lies. Cuba's newspaper pages are covered with ugly cartoons about Jews. Where do the lies come from? Who dreams up the insults that make ordinary people sound like beasts and feel like sheep in a forest of wolves?
Daniel, today a ship left Havana Harbor. Desperate relatives of the people on the ship rowed out in small boats, calling up to the decks, where their loved ones leaned over the railings, reaching. One man hurled himself overboard. Was he trying to drown himself, or was he hoping that he could somehow swim to shore? I picture the German sailors laughing and spitting in faces while they point to the posters of Hitler in the dining room. I feel the terror of the refugees as they realize that they are being sent back to Europe. Daniel, where will the ship go? What will happen to refugees who find no refuge? I cannot bring myself to imagine the fate of all those people, all the children who traveled alone, just as I did. Each time I try to picture my own future, I feel just as helpless as the children on the ship. Will those children ever find a home? Daniel, I stand in a crowd on the docks, watching the ship as it grows smaller and vanishes over the horizon. There is nothing to do now, nothing but drumming on the earth with my feet and pounding out a rhythm in the air with my fingers. I feel so powerless. All I can do is talk to the sky with my hands and wonder how any country can turn a ship away, knowing that it is filled with human beings searching for something as simple as hope.
Paloma, what would my father do if he knew that I am one of many young Cuban volunteers who help los Quaqueros, the Quakers, from North America who come here to Cuba to care for the refugees, offering food and shelter? Which would bother my father more, knowing that I am helping Jews, or seeing me in the company of Protestants?
Daniel, the green-eyed girl turns her face away when she serves our meals of yellow rice and black beans. I cannot tell whether she is sad or ashamed. David explains that Paloma is not her true name. She is really Maria Dolores, Mary of Sorrows, but everyone calls her Paloma, the dove, because she often hides in a tower in her garden. A tower built as a home for wild birds. No one seems to know why she feels the need to hide.
Paloma, I sneak out of my room at night. I creep through the garden and up into the dovecote. I sleep surrounded by wings.
El Gordo. Paloma is not my daughter. My child is Maria Dolores. Paloma is just a fantasy name the girl dreamed up to help herself forget her mother's treachery. Until my wife ran away with a foreigner, our daughter was content to live in a house instead of a dovecote.
Daniel, I rest in the open patio, a crazy place shared with so many other refugees. I am getting used to sleeping in a house filled with strangers and trees. I am not the only young person unlucky enough to end up alone in this crowd. The nights are as hot as the days, glowing insects flash like flames, and a pale green moth the size of my hand floats above my head like a ghost. Sometimes I feel like a ghost myself. Daniel. Tonight, I cannot sleep. I listen to the chirping of tree frogs and the clacking beaks of wild parrots. And music, always music, the rhythms of rattling maracas and goatskin drums. Even here, in the city, where one would expect to hear only sirens, buses, and the radios of neighbors broadcasting news about Germany. Sometimes I wish I was not learning Spanish so easily. Then I would not understand all the lies about Jews.
Paloma. In the morning, I walk past the brightly painted houses of Havana, lime green, canary yellow, and sapphire blue. The houses look like songbirds. I picture them rising up into the sky and fluttering away. With each step, I ask myself questions. What would Papa be like if my mother had not sailed away with a dancing man from Paris? Is she still there? Did she marry the dancer? Do they have children? Are there brothers and sisters who ask questions about me? I do not ask myself anything about the start of a war in Europe. I do not want to know if my mother is dead. Paloma. I come from a family of secrets. No one else knows about my mother. They think she's dead. Even her own aunts and cousins were told that she was killed in a train crash during a vacation in Paris. I found out the truth by sneaking glimpses of my father's mail. There was only one letter from Mama, a brief one, where she claimed that she left Cuba because the island is too small and too quiet for her taste. Now, whenever I think of her, I picture her surrounded by huge waves like mountains of angry noise. Paloma. David assures me that my help is appreciated, even by the boy who keeps to himself and looks so unfriendly. The ice cream man says that Daniel is just lonely and frightened. So I give Daniel one of the white guayabera shirts that my mother embroidered so long ago. And I give him one of my father's many fine Panama hats. An expensive hippie-hapa hat, cool and comfortable, like a splendid circle of shade from a portable tree. Both the hat and the shirt are so big that the boy's eyes and hands are hidden, but his smile is out in the open, and his laughter sounds like cool rain.
Daniel. Many Cuban words still sound foreign to me, but David is a name I can really understand. David, the boy with the slingshot, the one who killed a giant. Now the old man called David tells me I will have to fight three giants if I want to get along here in Cuba. The first giant is heat. The second is language. And the biggest is loneliness. Accept friendship wherever it is offered, David advises. You never know when things will change. And you might find yourself trying to decide how to help the same strangers who now work so hard to help you. Daniel. At least my family was still together for my bar mitzvah when I turned 13. Times were hard, but we were all so overjoyed following the long, solemn ceremony with feasting and laughter. Paloma speaks of her first communion with pride, a white dress, white shoes, and long prayers. Catholic ritual seems so mysterious, but Paloma insists that in Cuba, Protestants are considered the most exotic people, with churches as plain as houses and no gold or silver decorations, and no chanted songs in an ancient language like Latin or Hebrew. So when Quakers come to the shelter, we ask them if it is true that they will worship without a leader, and they answer yes, because they believe that no one is closer to God than anyone else. In their meetings, all are equal.
Paloma. Together, Daniel and I visit a Quaker meeting to see if it's true that Protestants really are exotic. We join a circle of people sitting quietly praying. Sometimes they sing without the music of an organ or even a piano or guitar. The human voice sounds so wistful all by itself. After the quiet, eerie service, we run down to the beach, where the music of waves sounds so joyful and wild.
David, when the young people ask me to tell the tale of my youth, I try to describe Russia with her vast forests and wheat fields. I speak of frozen lakes, ice skates, long winters, and wars. Soldiers galloped into my village with torches, setting fire to the houses, killing the women and capturing the boys, forcing us to kill others. So I ran away to the seashore, where I found an old ship, splintered and creaking. When I asked the captain if he was sailing to America, he said yes, and it was true. Here I am, decades later. I did not arrive in New York as I had expected, but in this other part of Las Americas. All of that was long ago, and the past is the past. I must think of the future. Next month, Cuba will celebrate the summer carnival, a delightful madness of dancing and music. July, 1939.
Paloma. I gather feathers and beads for decorating masks, capes, wings, and horns. I show Daniel how to dance on stilts. Together, we craft crowns, robes, turbans, and cardboard horses for make-believe knights. We practice spinning long poles topped with lanterns. Our towering castles of candles are explosions of light. Daniel helps me invent musical instruments, using things that wash up on the beach. Cowbells, conch shells, brake drums, railroad spikes. We remind ourselves how to be happy, at least for a few hot midsummer days.
David. Dancing on stilts has always been my favorite delight of carnival season. I feel like I am sitting on God's shoulders, looking down at a beautiful world. 2 years ago, carnival was canceled when a Cuban official decided the dances were too African, too tribal. But outlawing dance in Cuba is like trying to hide the sun with one finger. Joy and truth both have a way of peeking through any dark curtain.
Paloma. The names of the carnival teams are Pretty Bird, Hawk, Toad, Scorpion, and Serpent. My father used to dress up as the heroic magician who kills scorpions and snakes. Now he won't even watch the dancing or listen to music of any sort. The part of his soul that loved melodies and rhythms vanished when Mama danced away.
Daniel, I never stop dreaming of my parents. I see my grandfather on the night of crystal while I fasten pieces of a broken mirror onto the magician's cape of silky blue cloth, creating a sky filled with stars. I hear my father's voice over the clang of farm tools used by Cubans for making music, shovels, hoes, and rakes, accompanied by drums and dreams. My grandfather would have been horrified. He loved the soft music of flutes and violins. Daniel, I think of my family so often that my grandfather seems to be alive, and my parents' voices sound real, as if shadows and memories could play their own sad music. Daniel, Paloma and I have decided to sell flowers and fruit from her garden to raise money for new refugees who arrive every day. Each time a ship lands, many people need food, clothing, and a place to sleep. Knowing that our labor has a purpose, it is almost easy for me to smile while I work, decorating a fruit cart with cheerful green palm fronds and startling red tassels to ward off the evil eye, even though I don't believe in superstitions. Sometimes, I'm not sure if I can ever believe again in the miracles from my grandfather's stories about angels and rescues. Daniel, music helps me forget my loneliness. Melodies feel like paths I can follow to find my way past all the terror. I learn how to play a big conga drum and a set of two small bongo drums, and the square rumba drums made from codfish boxes, hollow drums played by the dock workers who unload cargo from the ships while they sing. Daniel, when I realize that summer carnival is a religious festival, I almost change my mind about dancing. My parents would not approve of celebrating a Catholic saint's birthday. But David explains that carnival also marks the end of a year's long, exhausting sugar harvest. And seasons, he assures me, are a miracle even city people can understand all over the world. Daniel, once I decide to dance, I put my heart into the movements and the sounds. I study the rhythms of polished sticks called claves and rattles of all sorts, and the giro, a gourd carved with grooves that are scraped with a stiff wire. And I study la quijada, the sun-bleached jawbone of a long-dead mule with loose teeth that chatter each time I shake the musical skull. I feel like a troubled ghost from one of my grandfather's funny stories.
Paloma, the rumba is a wild dance, the conga is a festive dance, and the son has a more wistful style. The sort of music I think of as a danceable sorrow.
Daniel, today all the singing vendors seem to be saying, "Hurry, hurry, taste this moment before the sunlight slips away. Hurry, hurry, taste these wonders before I go on my way, far away." So I taste the sweetness of a guava that smells like a forest, and a coconut with its scent of beech, and the sugarcane juice called guarapo, a syrup pressed from towering green shoots deeply rooted in muddy red soil. Daniel. Acrobats leap, twirling long machetes. I think of my mother chopping onions. Men dance in capes, pretending to fight cardboard bowls. I remember my father, dressed up for his job as a pianist. Women dance with lanterns balanced on their heads. I see our flickering fireplace on a shivery winter night. Paloma dances on her stilts. I think of black forest trees swayed by wind. Each time I picture my parents dancing a waltz, or my grandfather hopping, clowning around, I feel like two people. The young man who makes music out of odds and ends, of wood and bone. And this other person, the boy lost somewhere, between the torment of memory and a few fragile shards of hope.
Paloma. The streets are decorated with strands of colored paper cut into the shapes of light bulbs and flags. I dance on stilts, smiling down at my feet, far below. Like Alicita in Wonderland, when she was tall. I feel like many people. The little girl who had a mother, and the one who hides with doves, and the one who obeys her father. And this, once a year, young woman who knows how to dance in mid-air. Paloma. Carnival only lasts for a few days and nights, and then I will need to dream up new ways to make money for helping the sad people, who still come on more and more ships, even though that one ship was sent away by my father. El Gordo, the fat man. Papa is actually not fat at all. He's a tall, lean man who keeps dreaming up ways to make his fat wallet even fatter. Paloma. Lottery vendors sing about tickets, so I buy them, based on my dreams, a Cuban custom. If I've dreamed about tigers, I buy number 14. Horse dreams are 1, and death is either 8, if the person who died in the dream is a commoner, or 64, if the dead man in the dream is a king. Dreams of a woman who is kind and gentle are number 12. So I buy a few of those tickets, even though I have not seen Mama in my dreams for a long time. And now, when I do see her, we usually meet in a nightmare.
Daniel. Today, Paloma and I trade secrets. She told me she longs to be a dancer like her mother. I admitted that I find it hard to believe I will ever have the chance to grow old, playing the piano like my father. His life as a musician made him happy. I always imagined that I would be happy too. But now, each night, I dream that German soldiers find me. I hear the crash of windows falling and people screaming, and the boots, so many pounding, drumming boots. In the morning, I have to struggle to convince myself that the Nazis are not here. Will I ever feel truly safe? Daniel. I sit on the beach. I play drums for the sea. Waves are my audience. The shorebirds do not listen. They are too busy making a music all their own. A dance of wings and stilt-like legs. Each feather, an instrument played by wind. Daniel. Islands belong to the sea. Not the earth. All around me the world is blue. Above, more blue, like a hot, melting star. Music is the only part of Cuba's heated air that feels like something I can breathe. Daniel, I feel like a King Midas of living things instead of gold. Everything I touch turns into something that grows. This morning, I heard a trapped insect chirping inside the wood of a table. It must have hatched after the tree was chopped down. Last night, I tried to read Spanish stories in a book marked by worm-eaten pages and parallel grooves left by rat's teeth. In the tropics, everything is eaten by something else. Trees lift the sidewalk, vines swallow buildings, and fence posts sprout leaves, turning themselves into hedges. Like King Midas, I am left with nothing but this unreasonable hope that somehow my strange life and my lost family will return to normal. Daniel. Cubans eat pigs and shellfish. Paloma buys crab fritters and fried pork rinds from vendors who sing about the beauty of beaches and farms. She might as well offer me spiders and mice. She does not understand our customs. She expects us to dance on the Sabbath, on Friday night, and all day Saturday. She keeps teaching me Spanish, but what use do I have for this island's sing-song language? I should be learning English. Even if my parents are no longer alive, I must plan on somehow reaching New York, in honor of their memory, their dream.
David, I was taught that there are four kinds of people in the world: wise, wicked, simple, and those who do not yet know how to ask questions. I was taught that questions are just as important as answers. I was a child when I learned these things. Now I am old, but I still know that life's questions outnumber life's answers. Carnival joy is one of my questions. Where does it come from? This season of musical contentment, even though I have lived so long and lost so much. December, 1941. David, perhaps I have taught the art of wondering too thoroughly. Now, the young people ask so many questions that the lack of answers makes me dizzy. I cannot bear to speak about my burning village, my parents and sisters, or my Cuban wife who died too young, or our son who moved away to who knows where and never visits, never writes. I have no wisdom to offer when it comes to the art of waiting for answers.
Daniel, waiting for a future and an understanding of the past means waiting for an end to a war far away. So instead of tormenting myself with impatient questions about Europe's suffering, I find my escape playing El Sartén, a strangely simple Cuban musical instrument made by clashing two frying pans together like cymbals in an orchestra, the sound of thunder or hoofbeats, the music of running and rage. Daniel. Paloma introduces me to Ernesto Lecuona, a great Cuban composer whose father vanished when Ernesto was only 5. To support his family, the boy played piano in those old-fashioned theaters where silent movie stars danced on white screens. Now, watching Lecuona's hands as they dance on the piano, I discover the secret of his genius. Both hands are calm. His hands are a team. And so are his inspirations as he blends the wistful melodies of Spain with hopeful rhythms from Africa, creating an entirely new sort of music, the sound of a future dancing with the past. Daniel. The more I hear Lecuona's piano, the more convinced I become that improvising is the music for me. Lecuona has captured the tropical magic of daydreams and wishing. All over Havana, shoeshine boys and candy vendors walk down the street, changing old songs into new ones. Cubans call this skill decimar, the art of inventing life as it goes along. Daniel. Instead of answering my questions about her mother's dancing and her father's work, Paloma walks with me up and down the cobblestone streets of old Havana. I understand her reluctance to talk about painful memories, so I let her be quiet. Instead, we listen to the clip-clop of a cow's hooves as the lechero delivers fresh milk from door to door, milking into a clean pitcher handed to him by each housewife. When we listen to a mockingbird singing from the top of a palm tree, Paloma says the bird sings like a Cuban, inventing new melodies each time his beak opens. I tell her I know how the bird feels, unwilling to be satisfied with yesterday's song.
Paloma. I have so much to say about my mother's dancing and my father's work, but I do not know how to speak of things that really matter. So instead, I tell Daniel about my school, where I study math, reading, writing, lace making, and saints' lives. My favorite teacher is an old nun with a sad smile. My favorite saint is Francis, who spoke to birds and wolves. Birds are so much easier to understand than people, but I'm not so sure about wolves or saints.
Daniel. Suddenly, everything changes all over again. I had almost grown accustomed to living in this unfamiliar land, when without warning, the safe haven called Cuba stopped feeling safe. Pearl Harbor has been attacked by Japan. Cuba is arresting not only Japanese citizens, but Germans as well. The most unsettling part of all this turmoil is the distrust. By now, I should know how to live with utter confusion, but I feel just as uncertain as before. I am from Germany. Will I be arrested too? Daniel. Thousands of Germans, according to rumor, will be held in a guarded compound on the Isle of Pines, a small prison island just south of Cuba. Suspicious stares, whispered insults, the tension of distrust, just like before. It takes some time for things to become clear. Only Germans who are not Jewish will be rounded up and sent away. Daniel. The red J on my passport, a J stamped by Nazis, proves that I am Jewish, a refugee, not a spy. Still, there is the terror of being questioned by police, and the fear of those Jews who happen to be married to Christians. Suddenly, I understand that the Christian spouses of Jewish refugees are being arrested, simply because they are not Jews. Daniel. Germans who do not have passports with a red J are so fiercely suspected of being Nazi spies that the whole world seems upside down. I cannot understand how the J that condemned me in Germany has been transformed into a mark of safety on this crazy island. What a strange twist of fate. There, but for the grace of God.
David, life is so full of ugly surprises. arresting Christian Germans who have come to Cuba with their Jewish wives or Jewish husbands. All of this makes no sense at all. But what if there really are Nazi spies entering Cuba from the refugee ships?
Daniel, there is terror all around me as wives and husbands are pulled apart in the refugee shelter. No good can come of this, even if it does end up helping a few Christians to finally understand a bit of the horror experienced by Jews at home, where we were the ones rounded up for nothing more dangerous than our spiritual beliefs. Still, I cannot help seeing the suffering and hearing the whispers of fear and feeling so angry all over again. Daniel, the oldest couple in the shelter where I live must now face this new crisis of origins. The woman, Miriam, is Jewish, and her husband Mark, called Marcos by the Cubans, he is Christian. If I could help them hide from this turmoil, I would. Don't they deserve an old age lived together in peace? My parents taught me to respect all faiths. It just isn't right to arrest a man simply because he has not the same religion as his wife of 60 years.
Paloma, Miriam and Marcos stayed together throughout their ordeal, fleeing all the way across Europe. To keep her safe, he hid with her in haylofts and cellars, surviving with the help of Dutch farmers and Basque fishermen, until finally they were able to find safe passage on a ship from Portugal to Cuba. They said that ship seemed like an angel, with huge, floating wings. Now they refuse to separate. They have fled from the shelter and are hiding in my dovecot. I did not give them permission, but I cannot send them away. What will I do if my father discovers the secret visitors who are depending on me?
David, the young people bring me a baffling new question, one that lies far beyond my own powers of thought. This question belongs to the mind of God. How can people stay sane in a world that makes no sense?
Daniel, rumors fly like the dark vultures that circle Cuba's clouds after each summer storm. Hungry vultures searching for dead things left behind by the floodwaters. People whisper that soon no more refugees will be allowed to land in Cuba. Is there any chance at all that my parents might have found a way to reach a ship, just as Miriam and Mark did? Could my parents actually be sailing toward me right now, on one of those doomed ships that will soon be turned away? Daniel, Cuban officials are afraid that each shipload of refugees could also be delivering a few Nazi spies. How can I choose between wanting to help all the refugees and longing to defeat the madness in Europe, a madness that destroys both victims and victors, turning our neighbors in Berlin into monstrous nightmares? Glassy-eyed madmen who break windows just to cut through human flesh with knives of crystal. Daniel, I feel like that other Daniel, the one who survived in the lion's den, the one who interpreted dreams. I feel the heaviness of nightmares, even though I am awake. How weary I am, how sleepless and hopeless. There is no escape from the torment of wishes. If I could help someone, anyone, maybe even Miriam and Mark, if I could help them, at least I would feel that I had fulfilled my parents' wishes. They said all they wanted was courage for me, hope for the future, and peace for themselves, the kind of peace that hides in the heart, even when war seems to swallow the world.
Paloma, I was taught that the sun cannot be hidden with one finger. But sometimes I feel like I am surrounded by so many secrets that the truth would need light from a whole galaxy of suns in order to shine past the shade I make with both hands each time I watch a bird leave my dovecote to explore the dangerous sky. Paloma, secrets are a burden. I share mine with Daniel and David. Now, all three of us know that Miriam and Marcos are here with me, hiding. How dangerous it is! Someone could find them and accuse me of treason. Papa has already warned me that I am no longer allowed to keep homing pigeons because they might be suspected of carrying messages written by spies. Paloma, all I have left now are a few of my faithful wild birds, natives of Cuba, the blue-headed quail doves and sturdy rock doves, and imported birds, the tame peace doves, poor souls. The peace doves are far too trusting to survive in the wild where hungry cats pursue them. Each time I think of the risk I am taking by letting strangers hide in my dovecot, I feel like a peace dove, so vulnerable, a fool. Paloma, my plan is dreamlike, but Daniel says that is why it will work. I am the only one who cares for my doves. Papa and the servants never climb the spiral staircase up into my world of bird life. Now, while my father is inside the house with his secrets, I will be in the tower in the garden with secrets of my own. I will be dreaming a plan of trust and peace.
Daniel, hollow bones are the magic that helps a bird fly. Hope is the mystery that keeps me alive. Kindness is the surprise that makes me hopeful. Love is the kindness that keeps Miriam and Mark together. We will help them. We will try.
Paloma, secrets grow like tropical vines. The dovecot is messy, like my mind. I visit quietly, sneaking in, creeping up, carrying food for the terrified old folks who suddenly seem like family.
David, the young people seem crazy, but their plan just might work. It's worth a try. Miriam and her husband have hidden in dark cellars surrounded by rats and spiders. Now they hide in a tower with nesting birds. Miriam told me she wishes that she and Mark were the ones with wings.
Daniel, a few weeks ago, if you had told Mark that he would be the one in danger of being arrested because he is Christian, he would have said, no, that is not possible. Now I wonder, will people in New York and Toronto hear about this reversal of danger? And will it help them understand that those who feel safe today could be the ones in need of refuge tomorrow? Will this strange experience in Cuba help people in other places see how I felt when my ship was turned away?
Paloma, every dove has its querencia, a beloved place, where no matter how far a bird has journeyed, it will always return. Each flight, away from the nest, is an act of faith. The nest does not move. The dove's faith is rewarded. I must try to believe that the effort we are making to help one old couple will bring them hope, not disaster.
Daniel, I will never understand the whole world, or even one country. All I can do is try to understand the truth and lies in the simple choices I face every day.
David, newspapers now carry stories about war secrets from the United States, secrets smuggled to Germany by way of Cuba, secrets smuggled by Nazi spies, secrets smuggled inside hollow canes and umbrellas. No wonder the refugee ships are now being turned away from Havana Harbor. I feel like a ghost watching the living sail away toward death.
Paloma. Secrets twist and turn as they grow. But no matter how often I consider the dangers, I feel certain that we are doing something good. Surely, a frail old man like Marcos could not be one of the Nazi spies. I would be able to tell if he and Miriam were lying, wouldn't I?
Daniel, German submarines have been found in Cuban waters. Americans are patrolling the coast. Even Ernest Hemingway, the famous American writer, has been authorized to search for submarines in his little fishing boat. What will all this mean for the future of refugees? There are so many rumors about death camps in Germany, so many rumors about suffering and cruelty. I don't know which rumors to believe, but I do know that I should feel like one of the fortunate few. So why do I feel nothing beyond the endless ache of loss? Perhaps I should have stayed with my parents in a death camp. Daniel, when I visit the Dovecote, I try to listen to the old folks' words. But sometimes, all I hear is the rhythm of voices that sound like trees with rustling leaves, or waves on the seashore answering the wistful cries of lost birds blown off course by storm winds. I long to hear all the words, the story, but I find myself unable to absorb too much at once. Truth works its way into my mind, bit by bit. All the horror the old folks survived. Now, all I can do is pray that somehow I will be able to transform their pain and mine into music.
Paloma, I will not live in my father's house. He invaded my tower. He frightened my birds. The refugees just barely escaped. Did Papa know that they were hiding here? I don't care. I am so tired of his secrets and mine. I will not stay in this life of lies. Paloma. Poor trembling Miriam and frail Marcos hide in the garden until I have a chance to sneak them out. Daniel helps me walk them to the station, where we get on the first train that comes along. The train is filled with crowds of peasants and children, all carrying bundles or chickens or goats. No one seems to notice that our hands are empty and we are nervous. Miriam almost weeps. Marcos looks grim. What will we do if we are questioned by the conductor or police?
Daniel, this isn't the orderly plan we had daydreamed. This is madness. fleeing in a hurry without knowing where we can go. What if we were caught, helping Mark avoid arrest for being a Christian married to a Jew? Will Paloma's father chase us? What will happen if we are caught? I must be dreaming or crazy to be risking so much just to help an old man and his wife stay together.
Paloma. The train is filled with orphan boys heading to an orphanage on the Hershey Ranch, where the American chocolate maker gives them a home and plenty of chocolate made with Cuban sugar. The orphans play games and sing funny songs that would make me laugh if I was not so scared. The only place I can think of going is to the home of a distant cousin on my mother's side. Before Mama danced away, she used to assure me that all good people believe that we are our cousin's keepers. I think she just hoped to convince me that being an only child was not the same as being alone.
Daniel. We ride the train to a seaside town where Paloma's cousin agrees to let Miriam and Mark live together in peace in his home. This crazy plan would not have worked if Paloma's cousin did not trust her. I wonder how my own life would have turned out if we had known someone in the German countryside who could have kept us together hiding on a farm. Daniel. The countryside is beautiful, so green and tangled with life. Royal palms are the most graceful trees I have ever seen. They sway like Berlin's ballet dancers. The country people look poor and weary, getting around any way they can on skinny mules and old horses, or in battered cars that run on fuel made from sugarcane. I feel like I have traveled back in time, to a century when wars did not swallow the whole world. If only the peace I feel right now could be stored up and released later, when cruelty surrounds me in the dark during nightmares.
April, 1942.
Paloma. Miriam and Marcos are still safe. My cousin keeps me quietly informed. Last year, after the train journey, David convinced me that I should return to my father's house, at least until I finish school. So I am home now, in my garden, in the dovecote. But I have changed. I have decided to study science instead of dancing. I will be a student of nature, taught by birds. Paloma. I thought I understood my father's nature, but he actually seemed happy to have me back after that train ride. And he believes, or pretends to believe, the lies I invented about where I had gone. I told him that I went on a journey of discovery to find out where my peace doves go when they disappear. I brought back a peace dove from a bird market and pretended that it was one I had lost. I said that I had found it again, wandering around, out in the countryside, waiting to be rescued. That is how I think of peace, and peace of mind, as timid birds that we have to search for, not bold ones that come looking for us.
Daniel, the doors to Cuba are closing. The last two ships are anchored in the harbor, waiting for permission to bring 257 refugees ashore. Who will determine the price of their survival? Who makes these decisions about life and death? When the ship I arrived on came to this island, the line between safety and danger was narrow. But now, there is no line at all. Ships turned away will be ships of death. Daniel, for these last two ships, there is hardly any chance of landing. Public opinion has turned against Jews. Paloma tries to tell me that her father is the one who decides about entry visas for refugees. But I try not to listen. That is a truth I refuse to hear. My mind creates noisy music to block the sound of such impossible words.
Paloma. Daniel admits that he secretly wonders if his parents could be waiting on one of these last sad ships. I tell him it could happen. Yes, they might be two of the 257 weary passengers awaiting refuge. But we both know that everyone says Jews can no longer escape from Germany. The refugees on these last two ships are from other, quieter parts of Europe. Paloma. A mother bird pecks at her egg from the outside, while her baby pecks at the same spot from within. Working together, they will meet in the middle of the eggshell. That is their shared moment of freedom. Some jobs just cannot be completed alone. I am starting to share my father's ugly secrets with Daniel and David. They seem so disappointed that I did not tell them sooner. I think their disappointment is harder for me to endure than their anger. All I know is that the burden of lies is being lifted. I already feel like a newly hatched chick, experimenting with wings and a voice.
Daniel, Paloma's confessions enrage me. How could she have kept such terrible secrets for so long? We were friends, maybe more. Now I wonder if she will ever understand anything about trust.
David, I was taught that truth stands the test of time, while lies have a way of being exposed. 100 years from now, who will remember the truths we are living now? Will anyone know that we tried to save these last few refugees? 257 is not a large number compared with the ships a few years ago. But 257 living people will either survive here in Cuba or be sent back to Europe, to the Nazis and the war.
Paloma, asking my father to help the people on those ships is painful, but I have no choice. I promise to raise money for the visas. He laughs and asks, how much?
Daniel, 47 passengers have already been allowed to land. 210 remain on the ships. I walk to the harbor. I stare at the sea. I listen. The waves play their music of arrival and then loss. My parents were not two of those first 47. How could I have allowed myself to hope?
Paloma. $480,000. That is the price my father has chosen for survival of the remaining 210 human lives. Payment cannot be made in Cuban pesos. Dependable currency is required. Papa drives a hard bargain. I suppose he is good at his work. If only he longed to devote himself to charity instead of bribes. I would be so proud to be his daughter if he were working to raise a mercy fund for the refugees, instead of working to spend it.
Daniel, how will we ever manage to raise so much money? What if everyone on earth is weary of helping helpless refugees?
David, so many good hearts have swiftly given so much. Money comes from other countries and from people all over the island. The Archbishop of Havana has even made an appeal to the Cuban government for mercy.
Daniel, while those last two desperate ships drift in the harbor, a spirit of charity spreads like a fever or a new dance step, a carnival of sympathy with money flowing into mysterious channels, flowing generously, buying liberty, although freedom seems like a gift that should be given freely, without bribes, in some other way.
Paloma, 210 exhausted souls came ashore today. Jew or Christian, it does not matter. The refugees are people who migrate like birds, seeking a safe place to rest.
Daniel, those two ships were my last hopeless hope. So I busy myself handing out Cuban food and cotton clothes to the new arrivals. I teach them a bit of Spanish. I move through the cheerful island sunlight, pretending that I am happy to be alone. Will I ever know exactly where my parents' last songs were sung? Daniel, Paloma tells me that old folks speak of a custom called El Tocayo, the namesake. She says there was a time when an orphan could find a home with any adult who happened to share the same name. I cannot help all the orphans who arrived on the last two ships, so I find one whose name is Daniel, and that is where I start. One lonely child, one smile, one small musical voice.
El Gordo. If I had known that my own daughter would betray me to the Archbishop, I would have been more careful. I would have sent her away to one of those convents where the girls are taught how to remain silent and hidden, practically invisible. No matter, my wallet is fat. I convinced the government that the payments are needed to buy enough food to keep all those refugees alive.
Paloma, when I was little, my mother and I drank from Rio Agavama, a river deep in Cuba's jungled interior. According to legend, anyone who drinks those forgetful waters will fall in love with this island and will never want to leave. I remember that the river was streaked with sun and shade. I drank from a pool of sunlight. My mother must have swallowed deep shadows. Daniel has agreed to go there someday. David does not need to. He already belongs to his memories of Cuba.
David, I was taught that any story sounds true until an eyewitness comes forward to set the record straight. This is why I encourage the young people to write their tale of these years in Cuba, even if they write it in verse, in song. The time of secrecy is over. Truth is ready to sing.
Daniel, on the ship, German sailors sang songs about killing Jews. When we finally came ashore, they gave all the passengers postcards of the vessel to remind us of our journey and our fears. I tossed my postcard into the sea. A paper ship made of memory, floating away, so that I could feel free. But, until now, that freedom did not seem real. Daniel, I have nothing to give my namesake, nothing but time and hope. The same simple gifts I have received from those who helped me. So I take him swimming at the beach, in the evening when flying fish soar and the water glows with red algae. Together, we watch fish cross the sky surrounded by stars, and we listen to the rhythm of waves and wind, this narrow island's musical breath.
Paloma, Daniel and I are still friends, maybe more. The secrets have been exposed and forgiven. Now, we are all free to tell what we know. Daniel is putting our tale into a long ballad, a story song. I bring him a flamenco guitar to help him find the right words. On the beach, guitar music sounds like a part of the natural world.
Daniel, the strings of the Spanish guitar help my fingers dance through our story. Singing in a world where my parents have disappeared is not a betrayal. I am singing their story, too. Daniel, I talked to the younger Daniel about Carnival and Cuba's magical abundance of oranges. I discover that this other Daniel loves music, so I show him how to make a flute from a piece of wild bamboo and a turtle shell rattle filled with beach sand and decorated with seashells. Together, we make up songs in the Cuban style, improvised decimas that change as they go along with words added or altered each time we remember sorrows and joys, bitter losses, and sweet survival. Any part of life that seems worthy of music.
Historical note. The situations and major events in this book are factual. The characters are entirely imaginary. In 1939, Germany's Minister of Propaganda, Joseph Goebbels, sent 14 Nazi agents to Cuba to stir up anti-Semitism. A massive newspaper and radio campaign resulted. The goal of this secret plan was to show the world that even a small, impoverished, racially mixed tropical island wanted nothing to do with Jews. Any ship turned away from Havana Harbor had already been rejected by the United States and Canada. Passengers rejected by Cuba were returned to Europe, where many were transported to concentration camps. The Nazi propaganda campaign had met its goal. In December 1941, non-Jewish Germans were arrested and held at the prison in Isla de Pinos, a remote island off the southern coast of Cuba. Christians married to Jewish refugees dreaded being forced to share cells with Nazi spies, in a prison where inmates were known to make their own rules. Throughout the war years, corrupt Cuban officials demanded huge bribes for landing permits and entry visas. Despite tragedies and scandals, Cuba accepted 65,000 Jewish refugees from 1938 to 1939, the same number that was taken in by the much larger United States during the same time period. Overall, Cuba accepted more Jewish refugees than any other Latin American nation. Author's note. A few years before World War I, my father's Ukrainian Jewish parents fled the anti-Semitic violence that destroyed their villages near Kiev. When they found safe passage on ships to the Americas, they arrived in the United States, learned English, and became Americans. Some of their relatives who took other ships to the Americas ended up in South America, where they learned Spanish and became Chileans. My father was born and raised in Los Angeles, California. After World War II, he traveled to Cuba, where he met my Cuban Catholic mother. My parents were not raised in the same culture or the same faith. They did not speak the same language. As artists, they communicated with drawings instead of words. More than 60 years later, they are still married. I was raised agnostic, but I chose to become a non-denominational Protestant. Even though I did not follow the faiths of either of my parents, I hope I have taught my children to be the kind of people who will help refugees of any faith in times of need.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Tropical Secrets, Holocaust Refugees in Cuba, by Margarita Engel. Read for you by Matt Green, Vane Millon, Ozzy Rodriguez, and Roberto Santana. This program was produced and directed by Dan Musselman and Janet Stark. Text copyright 2009 by Margarita Engel. Production copyright 2009, Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.